You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Dippin' on some scissors.
Playoffs.
Dippin' on some scissors.
Playoffs.
Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors.
Playoffs.
Dippin' on some dippin' on some scissors.
What? Playoffs.
Dippin' on some scissors.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the midst of a historic run in Philadelphia sports. Your Eagles are 6-0. As of recording, your Flyers, believe it or not, are 2-0. The Sixers are opening the season against the Celtics, and your Philadelphia Phillies are off to the NLCS. But more importantly than all of that is the Philadelphia Union, who are going to begin the MLS Cup
playoffs
against FC Cincinnati on Thursday night at a sold-out Subaru Park in Chester, Pennsylvania. Really, it's the only game that matters this week for Philadelphia sports. The gentleman you heard laughing in the background there is our guest for today's show. It's Pat Brennan from the Cincinnati Inquirer, covers FC Cincy for them, and happens to be a local guy as well. Pat, what's good, man? Welcome.
Kevin, thanks a lot for having me on. I actually really do. I'm not just saying this. I love checking in with Crossing Broad. It helps me keep up with everything Philly sports, and it's a real pleasure to be on, so thank you. Thanks for thinking.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And you are a Delco guy. You are actually in Delco as we are yeah. recording this. Yes. Yeah, so where you are a Delco scumbag. Where in Delco are you from?
Yeah, my Delco depravity is centered in the Havertown area. That's where I grew up. And parents still here, even though I'm out in Cincinnati, Ohio. And as soon as, you know, there's a cost-cutting component to this too, but as soon as I, you know, started talking with the home office back in Cincinnati, it became clear to me that it would make a lot of sense to stay out in here in Philly. Whenever FC Cincinnati comes to the Mid-Atlantic, Kevin, the company will fly me into Philly, no problem. And then I'll just take an Amtrak all the way up to Boston in some cases. So it's a really good setup. I've been doing it for years, even back when I covered Xavier basketball in the Big East. So I love coming back. It's still home.
Well, we're glad to have you, man. I mean, this matchup basically has you written all over it. You know, it's the team, it's the team you cover, and then the team that plays in your hometown. Like, really, it's the Pat Brennan Derby in more ways than one, if you think about it. Real quick, though, I wrote many Philadelphia Union stories in Delco because this is going to sound kind of pitiful, actually. But, you know, I'd go down to Union training and, you know, there's no media like work room down there. Yeah. It's not like the Eagles. It's not, you know, like the Sixers or whatever. Right. Like, you have the press conference room, and sometimes we would stay on the computer there, maybe try to throw something up quick, but there's not really like an area. So I would get in my truck and I would drive to the Springfield Mall right off of 476. And I would sit there at the, in the food court where the, it's like the most pitiful food court, by the way. It's like two things in the food court. There's like a Sbarro and there's like a Tony Luke's or something. I would sit there and I would write off the Union quotes that I just got, cause there's nowhere else to do it. So
yeah.
That being my main Delco connection, other than the time that I spent 6 months living in Seacane. So I guess we all have a little bit of Delco in us, you know?
Well, hopefully. I think it's for the better. Actually, that's not true. It's definitely not for the better.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Springfield Mall, I haven't been there in years.
Yeah.
I heard it's looking a little run down.
Have you been – I'll answer a question with a question. Have you – well, you didn't really ask me a question technically, but have you been in any shopping mall in like the last 5 years?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
King of
They're Prussia. They're all looking pretty bad, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair.
I grew up going to the Coventry Mall and now there's like nothing there. The Montgomery Mall is like the closest one to me. Now there's nothing there except for like Bath and Body Works is going strong, of course. But
yeah,
it's kind of a sad state of affairs, but you know, that's true. But listen, what's not a sad state of affairs is this game coming up on Thursday. I gotta be honest with you, man. When I was doing the post game show, when we were doing other iterations of this podcast, you know, people would ask like, hey, who do you prefer? Who do you want to play? Who do you not want to play? Cincinnati was the team that I did not want the Union to play, for obvious reasons of, you know, they didn't beat them this year, right? You got a 1-1 draw, yeah, and then you got a 3-1 on the road. Pat Noonan and Chris Albright being there, too much familiarity. Like, I'm not going to go Negadelphia here and get all scared, but the matchup to me is kind of gross, and I'm wondering how people are seeing it out there.
Yeah, I think supporters of the club they're reasonably confident, probably mixed with doses of reality about who and what Philly are. Yeah, the FC Cincinnati had a great season series. You'd take 4 points out of six against any team, certainly, you know, the top team in the conference. And Philly's just been a standard bearer in this league for years now in so many capacities. So, yeah, people feel really good about, you know, how the season series went in the regular season, but there's still an acknowledgement there about who and what the Union are, like I said. And it was really interesting. I got out to Chester yesterday on Monday to do a couple interviews, and I had a general sense that Union players weren't wholly satisfied with their performances in the two matches against FC Cincinnati. Obviously, they dropped 4 out of 6 points. You wouldn't be. But they were like, Andre Blake was like really disgusted, like really pissed off about especially the August 6th match in Cincy.
The 3-1.
So people, I think, you know, again, there's a dose of reality mixed in with FC Cincinnati expectations. This is as good as a draw as it was going to be. You know, Red Bulls, the Union, who are an incredible team, but they've played well this year. And I think that's the hope going into Thursday. And I have talked to a handful of supporters back in Cincy. They just, well, they'd like to see a competitive match. I think there, no one has like, oversized expectations for what this match is.
I'm not going to lie, man. I think that what happened in the Major League Baseball playoffs kind of has me weirded out a little bit. You know?
Yeah,
because it's almost like you could make a connection here that Cincy is kind of like the Phillies, like probably just happy to be there after some shitty seasons and, you know, playing with house money. I'm a big believer in the house money narrative.
So am I.
Because, like, you know, I don't think anybody expected them to be there and to win a playoff game. And then, like, sky's the limit now. I mean, they've already overachieved, really, for this year, if you can make that argument. And then, you know, on the Union side, it's like Alejandro Bedoya is still not totally there. You know, they haven't played very well after layoffs this year, after long layoffs. So the bye week. You know, the first game that the Union and Cincy played was after the international break. Neither team played for like 3 weeks in a row. But I don't know. And the expectations are on the Union's shoulders. But, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that about Blake and the other guys, because I guess I didn't really think of the like revenge game kind of angle, you know. But that makes a lot of sense for them. I don't know. What do you make of number one, the house money thing? And then number two, like the Union kind of, you know, feeling like they're the team that has to prove something.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of those points. I saw your house money theory, and I subscribe to it too, in action at Red Bull Arena on Saturday. FC Cincinnati just, you know, whether it was the moments where they were, the rare moments where they were absorbing pressure from the Red Bulls or applying pressure of their own, which didn't really come until the latter stages of the match, they just did it with such confidence and at times not reckless abandon, but abandon nonetheless. And I put that down to the fact that they were just happy to be there. I think when all was said and done in the regular season, since he got in with an emphatic win, they punched their ticket with an emphatic win on decision day, but it was against DC United. So you don't really know what the value of that is. The match where they wanted to wrap it all up on October 1st against Chicago, they played probably their worst match of the year. So much like the Phillies, they really did not have Like, it was fits and starts in September for FC Cincinnati. They did kind of – part of me did feel like they were backing into the playoffs and, you know, all bets were off. But they're playing with no pressure. And, there's at no point during Saturday's match did I think, you know, this is a team that's uptight. I'll tell you, though, one thing that does intrigue me and I'm interested to see about FC Cincinnati is, like, there was no atmosphere at Red Bull Arena, which you expect that any match, any time of year there.
Which, by the way, can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
That is such a nice arena.
It's amazing.
It's such an amazing – it's like – it's a shame that nobody's ever there for that, you know? But I digress. I'm sorry.
I'm totally with you there. And it just – obviously, this is the biggest talking point in that whole conversation. The metro area in New York City being the size that it is, you can't find, like, 25,000 people for a playoff. Whatever.
I know.
It's their problem. It's been their problem for decades. Yeah. I hope they can figure it out, but we'll see. It was a noon kickoff at Red Bull Arena on top of all their usual problems trying to draw a crowd.
Yeah.
There was no atmosphere. Like, the fans that came out, like, were admirable. Their supporter section, their SGs were, like, super louder than I'd ever heard them. So, like, everyone that showed up did their part, but there was still no atmosphere. This will be a real playoff atmosphere on Thursday and probably the most ferocious atmosphere FC Cincinnati's ever played in.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how they respond to that. And I'll wrap this up real quick just on the last point. I do think the expectations are of Philly, obviously, on Thursday. Maybe that makes them come out and play tight, but I've had this theory, and it was really, you know, maybe there's a little confirmation bias there, but it was really confirmed for me yesterday just being around the group and I'll grant you, I parachuted in, but, you know, there's a real edge. Like, Andre Blake, I don't know what he's like on a regular basis, but he was really edgy, really edgy. Jack McGlynn seemed like he had an edge to him, and he seems like a pretty happy-go-lucky young guy. And Philly could, if I'm Ali Bedoya, who obviously, you know, we'll see what his role is on Thursday, but an Andre Blake, like, I'm going into this postseason with the Union thinking, like, I could have two MLS Cups in my cabinet right now. I could have two shields. Instead, I have one shield and no cups.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off, man. I am angry, and I don't think that's a good scenario for FC Cincinnati.
Well, and I think the thing, too, is that, like, I'm a big believer in the idea that these guys are battle-hardened, man. I mean, this Union core has played in the playoffs, played in the playoffs in 2018, 2019, won the shield in 2020. Went to the Champions League semifinals against Club America in 2021, went to the playoffs last year, probably should have went to MLS Cup last year.
Absolutely.
We're talking the entire core of Glasnis, Elliott, Blake, Bedoya, Martinez. I mean, that's like basically their entire spine. And then, like, you know, two of the midfielders as well at the same time. And, like, I look at Cincy and, like, it's a good point about them playing in a soulless Red Bull Arena in the afternoon. Because, you know, I'm thinking, like, who are the Cincinnati players that have, like, been there before? Jeff Cameron.
Nick Haglund. Maybe.
Nick Haglund.
In MLS.
In MLS. Lucho Casas played playoff games and whatever. But to me, if you're looking for, a line of demarcation here where if you throw all of the on-field stuff out and just look at, like, the intangibles, like the home crowd, night game, the fact that these guys have been there before, that's the biggest advantage that I would give to Philly by far. Because I just think – you know, it's weird, man, because they don't – it was interesting for me. And I went back and I watched, Cincy Red Bull, then both of the Union Cincy games. Not in full, a lot of fast-forwarding and stuff. But Cincy is the type of team, like, in deployment and the way that they play, that the Union have had success against within the past, which is to say that, like, it's a three-man back line. You got your wing backs going back and forth. I guess Cincy plays, like, more like a 3-4-1-2, if you want to call it that or whatever. But the Union usually have a lot of, like, success, like, getting into the gaps, like, playing early transition, just, like, keeping teams stretched and running. And for whatever reason, they just, you know, especially in that 3-1 loss out in Cincy, they just had a lot of trouble with Acosta. Like, Jose Martinez was having trouble kind of keeping track of him and, like, dispossessing him. And, you know, Vasquez is, like, a taller, a bigger guy who makes good, smart runs. And then, you know, Brenner has come along a lot of, you know, in a big way lately. And I feel like that front three is like tricky for them because they do a lot of different things. That's like my number one take. And then the other take is that I just feel like the Union have done well against those kind of defenses this year, but they didn't do it against Cincy for some reason.
Yeah, that which is super strange to me because the Union were the best attacking team by several metrics this season. And FC Cincinnati can, you know, flatter themselves about how the back line has improved. And certainly, like, Matt Miazga coming in has been huge for them in the secondary window. And, you know, Alvis Powell is Alvis Powell kind of, again, you know, you guys saw what he is about the stadium.
He's been there before. Yeah, no, I forgot to mention him and Miazga. Yeah, I mean, I guess the guys who comprise that back line have all played in high level.
Yeah, but, like, they just – they haven't played cohesively this year. You know, they – it was pretty leaky, you know, defensively, even after – well after Miazga got in the team. So – it is strange to me that the Union weren't able to break this club down. And I just, you know, I put it to Brandon Vasquez, in who is, you're absolutely right, he is a, however big he looks on TV, he is all of that and more in person. Really,
let me ask you a serious question here, because they've got him listed at like 6'2". He does not look 6'2" to me.
No, man. I if you'd asked, I didn't know what he was listed at. If you had just asked me how tall I thought he was, I would say 6'4", maybe 6'4".
He looks like he plays 6'4". I don't know where I saw 6'2". I think I just Googled him, and the first thing that came up was 6'2". I'm like, this guy looks like he's 6'3" or 6'4".
He's so big. He's so powerful. He has the best posture I've ever seen of any person from any walk of life. And he really is just like a super imposing guy. But I put it to him like, you know, what is it that made this team so successful against the Union this year? And, you know, he didn't have concrete answers for me. It was just that we're not going to change our game plan now. You know, we're not afraid of anyone. It's kind of like that confidence I alluded to when we first started talking here, but you know, they went 3-2-7 against the Eastern Conference playoff field this year. And the two losses were both to Montreal, and they won't have to worry about Montreal for at least another match if they were to somehow get through Philly. So, it's a strange one. You know, that was the high water. Beating Philly was the high water mark for this team. It was their best performance. It was the one that convinced me they had the ingredients to be a playoff team. But the flip side of that is I don't know over the totality of the two game series. I don't know how they actually got 4 out of 6 points off of Philly. It's a strange one. And maybe to, you know, the credit of the guys I spoke to in Chester yesterday, it did seem like they were hesitant to give FC Cincinnati full credit for those wins. And they thought that their lack of performance factored into it heavily. And, you know, if maybe there's something to that.
That's always a weird I mean, I don't know if I like guys saying that because it just – I mean, it's honest for sure. But, I mean, normally you just give credit where credit's due. It could comprise bulletin board material if you believe in that. I
Yeah.
But going back and watching, I took some notes on this game. So June 18th, it was Union 1, Cincy 1. This was at Subaru, coming off the big international break. I don't think either team had played for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Bedoya opened the scoring. He had that left-footed curler. That's the one where he got down with Tyler Blackett on the end line and dispossessed him. It could have been a foul. They could have blown the whistle there. And then the Cincy equalizer was on the – it was on the set piece where Vasquez was he kind of squirted free on the back post. There was a header. The Union didn't win the first ball, came back on the back post, and then I think he got injured actually with Andre Blake, like kicked him in the head or something like that.
Yeah, he had a nice gash on the old forehead. Absolutely.
I actually should have broke down that play. I do the breakdown sometimes on Twitter. Yeah. That was an interesting case in mixed man and zonal marking because when you're playing a mix, the guys who don't have marks on those second balls that are coming back over, they leave them. You know, so it's because you're not following the guy because you never had a guy to begin with. So now it's like, oh, shit, I got to turn around and find a guy. And he just, you know, squared it through. Celentano had a big save on Gajdag in that game too, near the end of it. And I think like as the final whistle blew, I think since he had like a three on one going and then couldn't convert. But that was kind of a, you know, that was one of those, Pat, where it was like, you know, you go to MLSsoccer.com and they have like the abbreviated, you know, highlight reels or whatever. They go up to like 15 minutes, depending on how much happens in the game.
Yeah,
this one was like 3 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't really get into the weeds with that one.
No, it was weird. So then the second game, you know, since he had a goal that was ruled offside with VAR, actually, I think there was an offside. Yeah. Then Vasquez,
handball, I think it was a Brenner, like upper arm hand.
Upper arm, is that what happened? Yeah, okay, right. And then Vasquez scored the opening goal. You know, one thing he does really well, this is actually what he did in the game winner against Red Bull last week, is that he's so good at just like hitting the posts, like not kicking the ball against the post, but like attacking the near post or attacking the back post. For him in each of those games, respectively, to just cook Glesnes at the near post and then cook Aaron Long at the back. Yeah. Like, he's deceptively fast for a big dude. I don't know if he just has long strides or whatever, but it was funny because last week, man, that was such a Philadelphia Union goal. You know, the ball is won, just head up, boot it. Sergio Santos on the left side, just first time cut it across. And like, I was impressed by that because that looked like something that came off the Union, like the Union film session, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you've got this much Philadelphia Union influence in a team, it's probably fair to say there's some Union fingerprints all over that goal for sure.
What does Noonan say when you ask him about that, or you ask him about Jim or Philly?
You know, he's been dealing with those questions all year. I was going back and watching some of these highlights myself last night, and I had forgotten that they played in preseason as well. Right out of the gate, like in, you know, January or early February, whenever that match was down in Florida, we were peppering him with, you know, the not cliche stuff at that time. Now it's become cliche, but just the Philly connection stuff. Chris Albright got some of it too. You know, Harris Madunian was still on the team. There was just so much of it. I think Pat has tried to downplay it. And after the Red Bulls match on Saturday, he like opened up a little bit. He's not a guy that offers like personal anecdotes at like really personal stuff.
Yeah.
But he said he thought the storyline going into Thursday was neat. And that was his word. This is neat.
Yeah.
I think he loves these games against Jim. I think he loves Jim. Jim was good enough to give me like 15 minutes yesterday, which was totally not what
he's the man. He's like the best coach I've ever worked with.
Yeah. He's incredible. And Pat is, you know, kind of like here's Jim, you know, Pat's right here. They're just incredible people to be around people. But
isn't that kind of the thing too? Like the way, if you're willing to give 15 minutes to some media guy that you don't even know.
Yeah.
Imagine what he's like with his players behind the scenes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was an interloper in Chester yesterday. I got a few, I got a few cockeyed looks when people realized I was from the Inquirer, kind of a failure to understand the role of the sports journalist there for sure. Yeah. But
well, also, traveling media being there at all for a practice. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that could also be, in itself is just rare across all of MLS. I have empathy there, but I got a really good picture of like the depth of the relationship, and there's just like an incredible. I think they're just, you know, between the three of them, Chris, Jim, Pat, they are kind of this best friend triumvirate. It sounds lame, but that's what they are, and I think Chris and Pat leaving the Union has taken a very human toll on Jim, because his two best friends went away, and you never know in life if you're going to link up again professionally.
Yeah.
They keep in touch. I would be shocked if Chris didn't have Jim down in Seattle at his place in Seattle. At some point, maybe multiple times, but you know, Pat also hit. They're all three of them are familiar with Ocean Drive.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either. I used to run into Brendan Burke all the time everywhere, who was the Bethlehem Steel Union 2 coach.
Yeah.
I ran into him in the bathroom at like Mad River or something in Old City. I don't think I've ever said that on this podcast before, but I was like three beers in and I was wandering downstairs and like I'm standing there at the urinal. I turn around and Brendan Burke walks into the thing. Like, hey, coach, what's going on, man? Yeah. Oh, what's up, Kincaid? Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah.
But those are, you know what's funny about all this stuff, by the way, is like I was reading Sir Alex Ferguson's autobiography.
Okay, cool.
And I was just like stunned with how much he would just talk about like the human side of his players.
Yeah.
You could drill everything into him perfect. You could do the best film sessions of all time. You could have the best talent. You could be like the most organized team with the best tactics or whatever. But it was like him talking about stuff like, hey, I'm going to call my player when I know that his like mom is sick, or, you know, his kid has like an ear infection. I know he's like worried about that, you know? So like making the extra connection to just like care about these guys, it's like this reciprocity, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm going to give a shit about you. And therefore in return, they're going to give a shit about me. And I think that's why they get so much out of him, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the case is true with Jim and Pat as well. And Chris, I talked to Jack McGlynn about like Chris's impact on his young career and just how hands-on and involved. Obviously, like it was Pat's job as an assistant here to be very hands-on with guys like Jack. But even Chris, just the fact that he's out at training, you know, 9 times out of 10, whereas in the past, you know, any technical director or GM that I've worked with in the past, like I'm sure they're off working somewhere, but they're definitely not down on the field at training. And there's just a personal touch there that you got with all three of those guys that is I think I'm in some position to say that it's rare in the game.
It's pretty cool. It is.
Yeah.
It's almost weird for me to say this, but it's a bummer that somebody has to lose on Thursday.
It is. I mean, look, I think, I went in with a theory. I went into Chester yesterday with a theory about why this team would be edgy and mad potentially. And I think, you know, this is a great opportunity for a organization and a team and a coaching staff that really deserves it to go and win MLS Cup. I hope Philly does that. On the flip side, just having seen those personal touches and, you know, kind of the Philly Union fingerprints and the way, it's not that I'm from Philly and that Philly was, you know, that I was a season ticket holder in the River End for a season when they were first born. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with that, but, you know, the kind of organization Philly is, the fact that the way they do things has rubbed off on FC Cincinnati. It's two teams that are really easy to root for, two head coaches that are really easy to like, and generally really, really likable players. It is a shame. I agree with you that someone has to lose on Thursday.
Last one, and then I'll let you go. I appreciate the time, man.
Of course.
I'm not going to ask you like for a prediction or anything, but I'll do how about we do a fill in the blanks question here? If in order for Cincinnati to win on Thursday, blank.
They have to, I think they're going to have to weather a storm for the first 15, 20, maybe 25 minutes. Again, just because of the atmosphere. I know the Union have been selling standing room tickets for like days and days now. It's just going to be crazy. They won't have experienced anything like that this year. FC Cincinnati just needs to keep their heads above water in the first half. And the longer they can keep within touching distance, like if there's an Ali Bedoya goal, like the one we saw in June early in the match, I think it's curtains and Philly probably gets on top and stays on top.
Three quick notes and then I'll sign off here.
Sure.
Number one, if they don't have Bedoya, I hate Jack McGlynn on the right side because he's a left player. I think that's a big and I'm paying close attention to that. Number two, attacking wise, they just got to release Mikhail Orr and Julian Carranza early. Hit those gaps, you know, in the channels because you're playing a three-man back line. You know, do what you've done well all year long. And then defensively, Jose Martinez has to have a huge game because when you're playing a 3-4-1-2, you know, and each of the center backs, one of them's going to have to deal with Brenner, the other one's going to have to deal with Vasquez. They can't look at Lucho Acosta coming down their throat, right? So yeah. Jose Martinez has to patrol the midfield like a motherfucker and follow him around. Don't let him turn, get up on his back, but be smart at the same time and don't pick up an early yellow card. And I think if they just come out alert and they show the awareness and like understanding and they're ready to go from the first minute, I think they'll be okay. But I think it's a tough matchup. I think it's going to be a good game, and you know, hopefully the fans get a good one.
Do you have a prediction?
Yeah, I think since he scores, I think it's close. I'm feeling like a 2-1 Union.
Okay.
Even like a 3-2 or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't think they keep a clean sheet against Cincy, but I do think that the Union are the better team and they're playing at home.
Yeah. So
I don't think that's a crazy.
I think oftentimes, and especially in MLS, when MLS soccer is going the way you expect it to, and that doesn't always happen, when it's going the way you expect it to, I think that should be enough.
For sure. Ladies and gentlemen, Pat Brennan from the Cincinnati Inquirer. It's if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at P Brennan ENQ. They spell Inquirer differently.
Yeah, Inquirer with an E versus my hometown Inquirer with an I.
Inquirer. Between Pat and Tannenwald, we have two good Inquirer reporters. At the game on Thursday night. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. And we'll do it again, all right?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kevin. I really appreciate it, man.